It's watching misery. He nudged his horse closer to hers and leaned in. Be sure to act completely disgusted with me and bitter at your fate, he said softly. She'll make sure we're in each other's constant company. Ildiko's thoughts reeled. One thing was certain, she wouldn't be bored. Staying one step ahead of her malevolent mother-in-law would take all her wits and focus. How a viper of a woman, as Brisson described, managed to raise such a jovial, affectionate man, flummoxed Ildiko. You must take after your father in temperament, she said. The humorous snorts from earlier turned into outright guffaws. Brisson's grin widened. Hardly. My mother sleeps with one eye open as well. He reached for her hand and gave it a squeeze. Don't worry, Ildiko. You'll understand more about my parents when you meet them. I'm counting on you giving me your honest impressions afterwards. I suspect they'll be entertaining. Ildiko didn't return his grin. He might find all this quite funny. She found it terrifying. She stiffened her back and clutched the reins in a tight grip. Her new in-laws may be a deadly pair, but she refused to be intimidated. I doubt we're much different from any other royal family out there, human or Kai. Brisson edged his horse closer to hers. We marry to strengthen our positions, hold our power, acquire more land and provide heirs for the throne. A business arrangement in every way. His features sobered, the grin fading. If we're lucky, we find an amiable companion in our spouses. His description applied perfectly to the royal family in which Ildiko was raised. Her parents' love for each other had been an anomaly, rarely seen among the Gowrie aristocracy, and not witnessed at all in Sangur and Fantine's immediate family. Marriage was business and politics. Affection and bedsport were usually reserved for mistresses or the occasional lover. And mistresses? She said. For some reason, she chose not to dwell on a discordant internal note thrumming inside her at the idea of Brisson having a mistress. One black eyebrow rose. What about them? Do you have a dozen or so? Ildiko raised her chin at the twitch of laughter that played across his mouth. It was a perfectly legitimate question. Her cousin's husbands each had a mistress, and a bevy of bastard children. Her uncle, the king, kept a prima dolce named Anais, for which Queen Fantine was eternally grateful. Brisson lost the battle not to smile. A dozen? I doubt I could deal with one. He shifted into a more comfortable spot on the saddle. Besides, I have a Gowrie wife to comfort me. Why take a mistress? His answer puzzled Ildiko. But that isn't the role of a mistress, isn't it? I think we all seek companionship, wife. Sometimes it's physical, sometimes it's much more. An odd flicker danced in his eyes, and like his grin before, his smile faded. Loneliness is an empty void. We look for that friend in the light. His glowing eyes squinted a little, deepening the laugh lines at their corners. Or, in the case of humans, in the dark. Brisson stopped his horse for a second time and tugged Ildiko's reins to halt her mount as well. He must have given an unseen signal because the Kai riding with them widened the space around them to afford more privacy. What is it? She said. What's wrong? His gaze pressed down on Ildiko. Not the smothering weight of a too heavy blanket in summer, but more like an embrace that invited affection. Not for the first time, she desperately wished she could read his eyes, see past the luminescence to the equally bright soul behind it. Will you be that for me, Ildiko? He said. That beacon in the void. Ildiko's heart cracked. Loneliness had been her most constant companion, the silent shadow that hovered over her for years. If there was one thing she understood, it was the emptiness of the internal void. Her reply might not make sense to him now, but she'd explain it later, when they were alone. She reached out, fingers tracing the herringbone pattern of his chainmail sleeve. "The void is vast, like the sea at night, and no land in sight. I'll be the beacon, Brishan." He captured her hand and kissed her palm. His lips were cool on her skin.
"My parents will loathe you, wife."
Ildiko felt all the blood drain from her face.
Brishan's smile returned.
"Don't be afraid. That's a good thing. They've hated me since birth. They only like those they can crush."
He looked as if he'd say more, but was interrupted by sharp cries and excited yips from the other Kai. Ildiko tried to understand the rapid stream of unfamiliar words flowing between the soldiers, but all she could catch was Haradis and Gate. She turned to Brishan. "What are they saying?" His reply birthed a legion of butterflies in her belly.
"Beyond that slope is Bast Haradis and the capital. Welcome to my kingdom, Ildiko of the Kai."
Chapter 10. Brishan escorted Ildiko down the long corridor that led to the throne room. She held onto his arm, her fingers digging furrows into his skin, even through his vambrace. It was the only sign of her anxiety, besides her ashen pallor. She wore a serene expression, and her steps were sure and steady in the hallway's darkness. Ildiko had grown quieter the closer they got to Haradis, and gone completely silent when they topped the ridge that looked down on the dimly lit city, nestled in a small valley ringed by gently rolling hills. She'd answered his questions with nods or shakes of her head, and every once in a while a short yes or no. He could smell the fear rolling off her.
"You're not alone in this, Ildiko," he reassured her for the dozenth time. Before their trek to the throne room, she simply nodded.
This time, she turned to him, her face wiped clean of expression. "This is the kingdom of Bast Haradis, Brishan. I'm human. Here, I am alone." He halted, and she with him. Brishan gazed at his human wife, touching on the colourful hair and strange eyes, the pale skin with its ever-changing shades that were subject to her moods. His soldiers' reactions to her would be nothing compared to those of the Kai court. Insular for so long, most of the nobility had rarely seen a human. Those who had barely remembered. They'd stare and whisper amongst themselves and do so much worse than that. Brishan wanted to protect her, shield her from the inevitable trial of meeting not only the vipers amongst the court, but those who ruled them, his parents. He was powerless to do so. She'd have to face them all, one human amongst the people who once considered all her kind food. But she wouldn't do it alone. He reached for her free hand. "You are also a princess of the blood through marriage, a member of the royal family. My wife. Every Kai in that room owes you their allegiance and respect. I will cut out any tongue that would try and besmirch you, Ildiko." He pressed his lips to her palm. The tiniest crack appeared in her serene composure. Her mouth twitched with the hint of a smile. Or bury an axe blade in their heads? His guilt over his inability to rescue her from his own family eased a little at her humour.
"I'm adept with a spear and sword as well. Just name who you want me to skewer for you."
Ildiko's smile widened. Not the best approach, I think, to winning supporters. She inhaled a long, deep breath before slowly letting it out.
"I can do this, but you must promise not to let go of my hand, even if I'm breaking your fingers."
Brishan gently pulled her into his embrace, She felt fragile in his arms, barely more than a shadow wrapped around slender bones and clothed in gauzy silks.
I promise.
I will not shame you with my fear, Brishan,
she whispered against his neck. He sighed into her hair.
But I might shame you with mine, wife.
He stroked her back and offered her a last bit of advice before they made their introductions to the court.
There are only two serpents, Ildiko. Crush them beneath your heel.
He led her the rest of the way to the ornately carved double doors, guarded by a pair of soldiers. The sentinels bowed, their faces as closed and expressionless as Ildiko's was now. The doors swung open, revealing a cavernous chamber with tall ceilings, walls decorated in tapestry and weaponry and lined by statues of ancient Kai kings and queens, all lit by wavering torchlight. Brishan barely registered its grandeur. He'd grown up in this palace. The hall had looked like this since before his grandfather was born, and probably long before that. Instead, he focused on the pair of figures watching them from the thrones, elevated on a platform, reached by a set of 9 steps. The silence greeting him and Ildiko gave way to a rising din of voices, a steady buzzing that grew in volume, like the approach of a locust swarm. There were shocked gasps, comments about the Gowrie woman's terrifying eyes and strange face, expressions of pity for him. Ildiko might not understand most of what was said, but it didn't take a fluency in the Kai language to know her appearance was causing a stir. Like him, she kept her gaze trained on the king and queen. Her fingers were icicles on his.
Steady, he said under his breath.
They stopped at the first step leading to the thrones. Brishan tugged lightly on Ildiko's hand, and they both genuflected. Brishan addressed the floor.
Your Majesties, I am your humble servant. I present my bride, Ildiko, niece of the King of Gaur, Sangur the Lame. Now, her segase to me.
The throne room had grown silent once more, pulsing with anticipation as Brishan and Ildiko waited on their knees.
You may rise.
King Jador's sepulchral voice echoed throughout the chamber. His eyes were nearly white with advanced age, and the grey skin hung on his facial bones like sodden garments clipped to strung line.
I'm told the powers of Belawat tried to have you killed to show their disapproval of this marriage.
Brishan knew his father well enough to know that as soon as this introduction was concluded, he'd be summoned to his father's council chamber for a full accounting of the attack. He shrugged.
We killed them all, but lost 3 of our own. Our companions fought bravely. I carry the mortem light of one.
Another murmuring buzz passed through the crowd of courtiers lining either side of the throne room. Brishan had done the family of the fallen soldier a great honour. The king's expression didn't alter at the revelation. Brishan had expected nothing more. His father had never expressed either approval or disapproval of his younger son's actions. They had no bearing on the throne or line of succession. Therefore, they were of no importance. He did turn his curious gaze to Ildiko.
I remember the first time I saw a human. A man. The women are even uglier.
A titter of laughter passed through the crowd and just as quickly died when Brishan turned to note who laughed. Ildiko's fingers twitched in his grasp. Jador's wrinkled lips stretched into a grin, revealing teeth gone as black with age as his eyes had gone white. Brishan braced his shoulder against Ildiko's to keep her from lurching backwards. The king turned to his silent wife.
What think you of your new daughter, Sekhmis?
The queen, beautiful and as youthful as the day she married her husband, stared first at her son and then at her Gowrie daughter. Unlike her husband, she spoke the common tongue, so Ildiko would understand everything she said.
"Welcome to Haridus, Ildiko, Herr Segese. I hope you can find your place here. My son has sacrificed a great deal to marry a human woman and seal our alliance with the Gowri."
Her lip had curled as she spoke, and though her voice was even, Sekhmis didn't bother hiding her contempt for Brishan's wife. Brishan fancied he heard Ildiko's back crack as she stiffened next to him. She yanked her fingers out of his grasp and advanced to the second step, shoulders back, chin raised in a haughty manner that challenged the queen's own arrogance. A collective gasp rose among the watching nobility. Brishan dropped his hand to his sword pommel. Gods forbid he'd have to slash his way out of the throne room to prevent his mother from killing his wife, but he'd do so if necessary. He balanced on the balls of his feet, ready to grab Ildiko and run. Her own voice was calm, lacking disdain, but sure and uncowered.
"What sacrifices would those be, Your Majesty?"
"I see only a groom returned home with a bride after an admittedly dangerous trip. He bears no wounds, no scars, and possesses all his limbs. I haven't yet had the time to henpeck him to death." This time, the crowd's laughter was disguised by splutters and bouts of coughing. Brishan didn't know whether to groan or applaud. Ildiko's wit would gain her either respect or a writ of execution. Sekhmis's golden eyes narrowed.
"You mock me?"
"No, Your Majesty, that would be rude."
Ildiko gave a brief bow.
"I wish merely to understand my husband's sacrifice. He will live among his own people. I cannot bear him children, but the line of succession is secured many times over. He cannot marry a Kai woman, but if the Kai court is anything like the Gowri court, his union with me won't prevent him from having a mistress, several if he wishes. If he can't bear the sight of me, we can talk in the daylight when he doesn't see so well. Then I can argue the sacrifice is mine, not his."
Sekhmis's skin, the colour of unpolished steel, darkened even more. Her eyes blazed brighter than all the torches in the throne room combined. She half rose from her seat, long fingers curled. Had Ildiko stood in front of her, she would have been disemboweled. Brishan had partially drawn his sword from its sheath when the king let out a bellowing laugh. Sekhmis turned a glare on him hot enough to set his robes alight. He ignored her and slapped his hand on the arm of his chair.
"She's ugly, my boy, but fearless too. You could have done worse."
He motioned to the doors.
"Get her out of here before your mother orders her beheading."
He flashed black fangs at Ildiko.
"You'll manage well enough, Gowri woman. I look forward to our next meeting."
The return trek to the doors seemed 1,000 miles and as many years away. Brishan strangled the urge to sprint for safety with Ildiko in his arms and kept them both to a stately walk. Once the doors closed behind them, they maintained their pace until they were out of sight and earshot of the guards. Brishan pivoted to stand in front of Ildiko. Even the ashen colour of her skin had bled away, leaving her pale as bleached bone. Her eyes were wide and black with terror. She took a step toward him before her knees gave out. He caught her in his arms and held her close.
"Well done, Herr Segese. You faced down my mother and pleased my father. Not a Kai in that room will cross you now."
She shuddered against him, her body as icy as her fingers had been. He heard the rapid chatter of her teeth before she clenched her jaw and drew steady breaths. Once she calmed, she leaned far enough away from him to meet his gaze.
"I've made an enemy of your mother," she said in a mournful voice.
"Everyone is Sekhmis's enemy, wife. You've just made yourself a worthy one in her eyes."
"I'm going to die, aren't I?"
He kissed her forehead.
"No,
You're going to eat. We still have a formal dinner to suffer through in a few hours.
Gods help me, she muttered.
You'll need it, he cheerfully replied.
Chapter 11. If she disregarded their physical appearances, Ildiko determined that the Kai courtiers were much like the Gowri ones. Ambitious, gossip-mongering, and highly skilled at surviving the savage intrigues of court life. She'd known the moment the doors to the throne room opened, and she and Brishan crossed the threshold. They'd pass through a gauntlet of curious hounds, eager for the scent of new blood. Anuzet's armoured breastplate would offer Ildiko no protection on that battleground. Familiarity with court etiquette and strategy offered some comfort as she knelt at the lowest step before her new husband's parents. King Jador was a man stitched of nightmares, a lich not yet completely rotted to bones. Brishan's body against her back had been the only thing that kept her from bolting out of the throne room when the king flashed his black-fanged smile at her. Her fluency in the Kai speech was adequate enough that she understood a portion of his remarks regarding the ugliness of human women. His insults had done a fine job of eroding her fear and replacing it with indignation. That indignation bubbled into a seething anger when Sekhmis addressed her in the common tongue. The queen had stared at her with eyes that gleamed red at the rims and a mouth that curled into a sneer. She sat on the throne, slender and garbed in a heavily embroidered gown that cascaded over the chair and pulled at her feet. Her silver hair was coiffed and decorated with jewels that winked dully in the low light. In her rebuttal of the queen's comments, Ildiko had been tempted to ask if Sekhmis might find it more comfortable if she were coiled around her throne instead of perched upon it. The horrified gasp from the Kai nobles and Brishan's hand on his sword, as she challenged Sekhmis's contempt, alerted Ildiko that she already antagonized his malevolent mother to a dangerous point, without insults to inflame the confrontation. Only after they'd escaped the throne room had her courage, fueled by anger, deserted her. Ildiko had collapsed in Brishan's arms, light-headed at her recklessness. He'd held her close, his praise of her bravery the only thing that kept her upright as he led her up a flight of stairs and down two corridors to a door decorated with fanciful strap hinges. He opened the door, revealing a spacious chamber lavishly furnished with a large bed, wardrobe, chests, and a table and chairs set near a hearth in which a low burning fire flickered. Brishan led her to one of the chairs. Ildiko dropped into it gratefully. She was truly part of the family now. Just like the rest, she'd have to sleep with one eye open, in fear of Sekhmis. "Do you want a dram of wine?" Brishan held a goblet in one hand and a pitcher in the other. "I'll take two," she replied, and offered a feeble smile at his chuckle. She took the goblet from him with shaking hands and searched for the right words that wouldn't excoriate Sekhmis too badly. She was Brishan's parent, after all. "Your mother is..." "A soulless creature with a thirst for murder and an intellect greater than any other in the kingdom." Brishan poured wine for himself in another goblet. "It makes her a ruler unmatched in both malice and strategy. My father would have been overthrown decades ago without her by his side." Ildiko blinked at him. Her husband continued to flummox her with his matter-of-fact acceptance of his parents' less than admirable traits, as well as his own good nature. She could only surmise that, like the children of most royal households, he'd been raised by a troop of nannies, tutors and mentors, at least some possessing a compassionate character. She wanted to ask him more, but talking about the Kai king and queen soured the wine in her stomach. Instead, she focused on her surroundings. "Where are we?" He took the chair next to her.
"Your bedchamber. At least, during your stay here in the palace. What do you think?" Distracted by his second remark, Ildiko gave her surroundings no more than a quick glance.
It's very nice. What do you mean by stay in the palace?
A second knot of apprehension twisted in her gut, taking up residence next to the one slowly unwinding itself from her encounter with Sekhmis. It wasn't at all unusual among the Gowri for noblemen to sequester their wives on distant estates, isolated from court life, while their husbands live separate existences, with a few conjugal visits each year to assure the hereditary line continued. While Ildiko liked the idea of putting as much distance as possible between herself and Sekhmis, she didn't relish a future in which she withered away in some forgotten castle, kept company only by Kai servants as resentful of their exile as she was. Brishan brushed her knee with a grey hand. One black nail caught on the fabric of her skirt, creating a pleat. Don't worry, Ildiko. I'll be exiled with you. I have a house on the far western borders of the kingdom. We'll stay here for a few weeks so you can become familiar with the Kai court, and then journey home. Brishan said home, in such a voice that he might as well have said sanctuary instead. It was obvious to Ildiko that while he tolerated the Kai court, his heart resided elsewhere. She recalled a map spread across a table in King Sangur's study, a cartographical masterpiece of the many kingdoms that shared the great expanse of lands this side of the Apturan Ocean. She frowned. Your estate nestles against Belladine lands. He nodded, his yellow eyes flaring brighter for a moment. It does, but I'm not defenceless, and I suspect our human neighbours will either wait before trying another stunt like the one on the trade road, or consider another way to foil this alliance. Ildiko hoped those neighbours would choose the second option, or just accept the reality of trade and alliance between the Kai and the Gowri. While she'd enjoy self-imposed banishment with Brishan at her side, she didn't fancy doing so while under siege by the Belladine Kingdom. She finished her wine and rose to set the empty goblet on the table. Will Anuzet accompany us? She smiled at his nod. Good. I very much like her. A knock at the door halted any further conversation. Brishan bade their visitor enter. A Kai man dressed in livery hovered just inside the doorway, shadowed by two women. All three bowed, and the man spoke.
Your Highness, His Majesty, wishes for you to meet him in the council chamber.
He said more, but Ildiko's understanding of the Kai language was not extensive enough to pass out everything. Brishan nodded and stood.
Speaking of Belawat, my father will want to know more about the attack on the trade road.
He reached for her hand and kissed her fingertips, his touch cool and soft on her skin. The king's messenger stood to the side so the women behind him could enter the room. Ildiko rose from her chair to stand by Brishan. The women were also dressed in the garb of palace servants. One looked older than the other by a decade, and both were young. While the elder one tried not to gawk at Ildiko, the younger servant ignored her, her lamplight eyes trained solely on Brishan, who returned her stare with a like intensity. "I've seen you in memory," he said, gently in the common tongue. "Are you Talame's kin?" The girl's still features crumpled. She fell to her knees before Brishan, who frowned.
"His sister, Your Highness, Kergipa, Shah Anuzet sent word of the fallen. You have honoured our family, that a prince would carry Telemay's mortem light."
Brishan interrupted her with a hand on her arm. "Stand up, Kergipa." He coaxed her to her feet. His frown had eased, but not the sorrow in the downturn of his mouth. "It would have been a better thing had I returned him to your mother alive and unharmed. It's he who honours your family. He was a good soldier and fought bravely." Kirgipa's chin quivered, and Ildiko wondered if the Kai shed tears as humans did when they mourned. The servant bowed to Brishan and then to her, before returning to her place next to the older woman. Brishan turned to the king's messenger, waiting patiently by the door. "Send another message to Keir Gippa's mother. I'll arrive tomorrow with her son's Mortemlight." He turned to Ildiko. "Do you wish to accompany me? We'd go tonight. But there's no escaping the celebration feast without unleashing the Queen's wrath on everyone involved in our absence." Ildiko gave an involuntary shiver at the thought of Sekhmet's retribution. She glanced at Keir Gippa before easing closer to Brishan so only he could hear her.
"Are you certain? I'm an outlander here, Brishan, and this is Kai business in both flesh and spirit."
His black eyebrows snapped together in a scowl, surprising Ildiko. "You are first and foremost of the royal house of Kashkum. There is no place barred to you except by the will of Jador and Sekhmet." Were they alone, she might have smoothed the line by setting the space between his eyebrows. Instead, Ildiko limited her touch to a brief caress of his arm. She didn't miss the watchful stares of the nearby servants or the looks exchanged between them.
"This isn't a matter of rank and access, Brishan, but of discretion. Would a woman mourning the loss of her son welcome a stranger to witness it? Especially one who draw the attention I will."
Brishan still scowled, and his eyes glowed a little brighter. "What would you do in her place?" She shrugged.
"When I lost my parents, I found no comfort in the sympathies of strangers. But each person is different, and I am neither Kai nor a mother, two roles in which I have no experience."
He eyed her for a moment. "Will you go, for my sake?"
"Yes,"
she said, without hesitation. Obviously pleased with her answer, Brishan bowed and turned back to the messenger. "Let's get this over with so I may return to my wife." He paused and turned back to Ildiko before stepping into the hallway. "The chamber next door is mine. You're welcome to explore it." He winked at her. "Much to my family's disgust, I'm a man of few secrets." He disappeared into the corridor, closing the door behind him and leaving Ildiko alone with the two Kai women. The silence grew awkward as Ildiko considered what to say.
"I am still learning your language," she said.
Both women shifted in place, and Ildiko congratulated herself on learning how to better read her adopted people's expressions. She'd definitely seen surprise cross the servant's features at her uttering Kai words.
"From what I can tell, your common is better than my Bast Kai, so why don't we start with common, and you can teach me words in your tongue as we converse."
They nodded in unison, and the three began a stilted dialogue between them as they helped Ildiko unpack some of her trunks and instructed other servants for where to place the tub brought in for a bath. Ildiko already knew Keir Gippa's name and learned the other woman was Sinwe. During her journey from Prisid to Haradiz, Ildiko had grown used to the stares of the Kai, sometimes curious, other times revolted. Sinwe's and Keir Gippa's didn't bother her, and they would be nothing compared to what she'd face at the welcoming celebration later, where she'd likely feel anything but welcomed. Except for a few smothered exclamations when Ildiko disrobed and stepped into her bath, the two servants were circumspect, civil and helpful. Ildiko fancied she even heard a note of approval in Sinwe's voice when she agreed that wearing Kai garb instead of Gowrie to the celebration feast was a good idea. During her preparations, she heard movement and rustlings next door. Brishan must have returned from council with his father and, like her, prepared for the upcoming festivities. He confirmed that assumption when he knocked on her door and entered at her bidding. No longer dressed in riding leathers and light armour, Brishan had changed into garb even more formal than he'd worn at their wedding in Prisid. A wide-sleeved tunic with a high collar covered most of a tight-fitting shirt and trousers, all in varying shades of black and forest green embroidered silk. Tiny beads threaded through twin braids were woven into his black hair. Except for the braids, he wore his hair loose, and it spilled over his shoulders, dark as a crow's wing. Being in each other's constant company during the journey to Harrodis had changed the way Ildiko saw him, tempered her perception of his otherness. His toothy smile still startled her, as much as her eyes unnerved him, but she began to understand why Kai women found her husband attractive. He hadn't abandoned his martial adornment entirely. A wide belt of thick leather, decorated with brass studs, cinched the tunic close to his narrow waist. Anyone interested in sliding a knife under his ribs would find it a difficult task getting through the leather for a lethal thrust. The belt sported a large ring sewn to the leather, and from that Brishan had tied his court sword. It rested against his hip, companion to the daggers tucked into the tops of his boots. Ildiko guessed he probably bristled with weaponry. These were just the ones she could see. "Are we going to war or to a feast?" she teased. "This is Jador's court, Herr Segesay," he said. "They're often one and the same."
While Ildiko knew he teased her in return, his remark sent her stomach into a nervous tumble. She wasn't one to partake heavily of wine or ale, but she hoped both ran freely during this meal. Otherwise, her hands might shake so badly she'd stab herself with her own eating dagger. She quickly discovered her husband was learning to read her expressions, just as she was learning to read his. He stepped closer and bent to whisper in her ear. "Peace, Ildiko. It won't be so bad. And I'll paint the walls with Kai blood if any dare threaten you."
Brishan meant his declaration as an assurance, but Ildiko shuddered. He was fiercely protective of her, and for that she was grateful. Still, she hoped they could get through this dinner without a decapitation or dismemberment. He stepped away and scrutinized her with a glowing gaze. "I hadn't expected this," he said. While Brishan met in council with the king, Ildiko had readied for the feast. When her new servants laid out the gowns she'd brought from her home across her bed, she'd given a disapproving cluck. "I should have had the forethought to have clothing made that a Kai woman would wear." A new gown or headdress wouldn't make her any more Kai or any less Gowrie, but adopting their fashion might demonstrate her willingness to embrace Kai culture. At her complaint, Sinwe had bowed and fled the room, startling both Ildiko and Kergipa. The servant returned with two Kai men who dragged a large chest through the door and shoved it against one wall. When they left, Sinwe lifted the chest lid and motioned for Ildiko to come closer. Ildiko gasped at the sight of lush fabrics stacked on top of each other, muted greens and golds mingled with bronzes and blacks as deep as serpent blood. Splashes of jewel-toned amaranthine and cobalt shone amidst the darker colours. She knelt beside Sinwe and plunged her hands into the treasure trove, pulling out scarves and silky trousers, embroidered tunics heavy with gold thread and jewelled girdles woven and draped with gold chains, more delicate than spider webs.
"It's all so beautiful."
Sinwe's wide grin spiked the fine hairs on Ildiko's nape. "His Highness ordered them before he left for your homeland, Herr Segesay. They're for you. We were instructed to leave them packed until you chose a time to wear them."
Ildiko spluttered, still awestruck by the chest's contents. They were finer than anything even Queen Fantine wore during feasts held for affairs of state. Her own wedding apparel had been beggar's rags compared to these clothes.
"Now is a good time," she said. 2 hours and the enthusiastic efforts of her maids to lace her, cinch her, and tame her hair, and Ildiko stood before Brishan dressed as Kai royalty. Of the many times she wished she could easily read Kai expressions, she had never wished more fervently for that skill than now. She was dressed similar to Brishan, long tunic with wide sleeves over a tighter-fitting shirt. Her tunic was longer than his, and cut so that it gave the illusion of a skirt, but with far greater freedom of movement than a skirt allowed. She wore trousers as well beneath the tunic, their ankle cuffs tucked into lace boots that reached to her calves. The girdle encircling her waist was as wide as his belt, but made of fabric in which rubies no bigger than peppercorns had been stitched and gleamed like small demon eyes in the dim light. Despite Sinway's and Kirgipa's polite but insistent suggestions that another colour might suit her better, Ildiko had chosen to dress all in black. Everything she wore tonight, down to the combs in her hair, had to send a silent message. Wearing the fashions favoured by the Kai signalled her willingness to accept her adopted people. Dressing in a colour that starkly emphasised her skin and hair signalled she was still Gowrie human and unashamed of the fact. "What do you think?" she asked Brishan, and pivoted in a slow circle. "Will this do?" He stood before her, silent for several long moments. Ildiko's palms grew damp, and behind Brishan the servant women crushed their skirts in their hands, apprehension plain in their pale, knuckled grips. Brishan reached for her hand and tugged until she stood close enough to feel his body heat. His hand rested lightly on her back, fingertips tracing the upper line of her girdle. "You're very clever, wife, and have a talent for saying much while saying little." The lines at the corners of his eyes deepened, and the corners of his mouth turned up. "This will more than do." Something flared between them, a sense of camaraderie, of belonging. For a brief moment, Ildiko felt as if she and Brishan stood alone in this chamber, bound together not only by vows, but by similarities far greater than their obvious differences. Brishan of House Kashkum was as fine a man as any born, whether he was human, Kai, or any other elder races that populated these lands. And Ildiko's affections for him grew by leaps with every moment she came to know him better. "You make a very handsome dead eel, my husband," she said and winked. Sinwe and Kirgipa both gasped. "For a boiled mollusk, you wear black quite well, my wife." Brishan shot back, and his smile stretched a little wider. More gasps, and Ildiko caught sight of the two maids gaping at them, slack-jawed at the exchange of insults. The sudden knock at the door made both women jump. Kirgipa was the first to answer, and held the door open as a procession of servants, carrying a small table and covered trays, entered. They set the table near the hearth, and placed their burdens on its surface. Plates, knives, and linen sanaps were set on the smaller table between the two chairs facing the hearth, and one poured more wine into the goblets she and Brishan had drunk from earlier. The servants filed out as quickly and quietly as they entered, leaving Ildiko glancing first at the trays from which savoury smells wafted into the room, and then at Brishan, who dismissed Sinwe and Kirgipa with a nod. Ildiko peered at the various trays. "What is this? I thought we were to attend the feast." She rather liked the idea of skipping that trial and eating in here with just Brishan for company, even if they were terribly overdressed for a quiet dinner between them. Brishan gestured to one of the chairs. "Take a seat. This is a practice try beforehand." He spread one of the linen sanaps on her lap while she sat. "You'll have the weight of every stare on you at the feast, Ildiko, and you'll be served things you've never eaten before. I'd rather you weren't surprised by what's put on your plate." Ildiko flinched a little with guilt. Brishan had bravely eaten everything served to him at the Gowrie banquet following their wedding. She'd been unable to determine his expression as he spooned his food into his mouth and chewed. But the tension quivering throughout his body had told her enough to know that dinner had been its own particular torture. "I'm sorry about the potato, Brishan," she said. His lips thinned, and he took a swallow of wine from his goblet before taking a seat next to her.
No need to apologise. Though I'll never understand how the Gowrie willingly eats such foul, disgusting food. Ildiko feared she'd soon echo that sentiment. Brishan slid the first tray onto the table and removed the lid. The dish was a medley of fresh fruit and herbs drizzled in a sweet sauce. He cautioned her to take only a small portion, so she wouldn't be too full to eat later. Ildiko liked it and recognised some of the fruits. While prepared a little differently than what she was used to, it tasted good, and she looked forward to the next offering with less trepidation. By the fourth dish, slivers of guinea fowl, roasted and then stewed in spicy gravy, she was thoroughly confused. From what she could tell so far, the Kai royal chefs were superior cooks, and the food outstanding. She could grow fat on such tasty meals. The fifth and final tray proved how terribly wrong her assumptions were. Brishan lifted the lid with a flourish, revealing a dinner pie large enough to feed two people. The savoury smoke rising from its top teased Ildiko's nose with the scents of herbs and pepper. The crust was perfectly golden and buttery, with a braided edge and fanciful dough cutouts that revealed the cook was as much artist as baker. Her mouth watered in anticipation of cutting into it. And then the pie breathed. Ildiko gasped and half rose from her seat, her sanap tumbling to the floor. "My gods! Did you see that?" Brishan's stoic expression didn't change, and he motioned for her to sit down. "You can't run from this one, Ildiko. It's served at every high feast and celebration. A delicacy among the Kai. It's a surety we'll be served one later. Newly married couples share it as a symbol of fortune and prosperity in the marriage." Ildiko did as he bid and sat, but scooted her chair a little further away from the table. "What is in that pie?" Whatever it was still alive. Fortune and prosperity be damned. Her throat closed up in protest at the thought of having to swallow something alive and still wriggling. Brishan picked up his dagger. "Watch closely, because at some point you'll have to do this yourself." He stared at the pie, as focused as a hawk on a branch, watching a mouse in the field below it. The pie's crust rippled, creating cracks across its smooth surface. A black spine poked through the crust, and Brishan pounced. He slammed the knife point into the pie hard enough to make the plates bounce on the table and splash wine from the goblets. An insectile screech pierced the quiet. Brishan twisted the knife. It made a cracking noise, and the pie abruptly ruptured, sending pieces of crust splattered in a black slime across the table. This time, Ildiko leapt over her chair to crouch behind it, wide-eyed and horrified as Brishan pried his knife out of the destroyed pie. It came free with a sucking sound, revealing a twitching scarpentine impaled on the knife's point. Ildiko clapped a hand over her mouth and prayed she wouldn't be sick. Brishan placed the scarpentine on his plate, careful to avoid the venomous barb on the end of its lashing tail. The knife had pierced the creature's hard shell to hold it in place. Brishan lifted a second knife and made short work of chopping off the lethal tail and then the head with its multiple eye stalks and curved fangs. What remained were the claws and the thick body of the carcass. Brishan cracked the rest of the shell in the same way Ildiko had watched sailors split the shells of lobsters. He peeled back the segments, exposing grey flesh. He sliced that away from the main body, leaving a layer of thick yellow fat and a mottled black vein that ran down its centre. Below that, another layer of the grey flesh. Ildiko slowly stood and watched as Brishan placed the first layer of scarpentine meat on her plate and spooned some of the oily dark liquid over it. He scraped away the fat layer and the vein, and carved out the rest of the flesh from the shell to put on his plate. He started and completed the process without once looking at her.
Brisson's focus shifted to Ildiko finally, and his voice held both sympathy and a kind of dark humour.
"I'm glad you wore black, wife. No one will see the stains."
She stared at him, sitting calmly amongst the ruin of exploded pie and the remains of dead and gutted scarpentine. Her serving of the Kai delicacy sat on her plate, a pale grey slab, glossy with a black ooze that dribbled down the sides. It twitched once. Ildiko's stomach went into open revolt, and she bolted for the basin on the table at her bedside. A strong arm slid around her waist, supporting her as she retched into the bowl. Brisson's hand smoothed her hair. He held her until she emptied her stomach and offered her a glass of water to rinse her mouth. Afterwards, she gazed at Brisson, bleary-eyed but resolved. Ildiko had faced down a woman far more venomous than a scarpentine. She would not be defeated by dinner.
"At least tell me it tastes like chicken."
Chapter 12. Though his mother might be planning Ildiko's murder for her unforgivable refusal to be coward, Brisson couldn't fault the Queen for the feast she ordered prepared to officially welcome him and his wife home. The dining hall was lavishly decorated. Flowers from the royal gardens hung in garlands over the windows and spilled in lush bouquets on the tables. Their opalescent petals glowing beneath the flickering light of candles and hanging lamps. The tables were covered in cloths of finely woven linen and silk. The benches upon which the nobility sat lined with velvet cushions. The high table was even more appointed, set to emphasize the royal house's wealth and power. An army of liveried servants lined the walls behind the tables, ready to serve. It was all grand, even majestic, fit for a royal Hesegus and his Hesegese. Brisson wished fiercely he could grab Ildiko's hand and escape back to her chamber, or his, and share a meal in relative solitude. If not there, then with the soldiers under his command. Even road rations tasted delectable when shared with good company. Ildiko could avoid another serving of scarpentine and he, his parents' poisonous interactions. As it was, escape was not an option, and he prayed for a quick end to the celebration. He approached the high table, Ildiko by his side, and the recipient of countless curious stares from the nobles gathered in the hall. She bore their scrutiny proudly. Attired in her crow-black finery, she was the picture of serenity and confidence, shoulders and back straight, chin raised at a haughty angle, equal to any member of the Kai royal household. She wore her mask well, but Brisson sensed her fear. Her hand rested in the crook of his elbow, fingers buried in the folds of his sleeve. Were she Kai instead of human and possessed the same sharp nails, she would have sliced through the fabric and scored his forearm bloody. Luckily, her tight grip only managed to slow the flow of blood to his fingers. Ildiko might not reciprocate the feeling, but Brisson considered himself fortunate to have such a wife. She was shrewd and insightful. Raised amidst another royal court, she understood its machinations and manipulations. Its subtle messages conveyed in something as innocuous as the cut of a tunic or its colour. He'd shield her as much as possible from the criticisms of the Kai, which would focus on her homely appearance and spread from there, but he suspected she'd manage to hold her own with even the most acerbic Kai aristocrat. They'd witnessed Ildiko stand against Sekhmet's barbed comments and the implied threat in her pointed questions. Only a few dim-witted Kai would still assume that she was cowardly because she was human. The nobles bowed as he and Ildiko passed them. Brisson ignored their stares, as he always did, and leaned closer to Ildiko. "How is your stomach?" She stared straight ahead, but her fingers flexed on his arms. "It's there," she said softly. He smothered a smile at her non-committal answer. The idea to introduce her to the delicacy of baked scarpentine before the dinner had been a strategic one. Even some of the Kai found the dish revolting, and it represented a much more challenging entree to serve as well as eat than the passive, foul-tasting potato. Her reaction hadn't surprised him. Her determination to eat the grey flesh, still squirming on her plate, did. Ildiko had rinsed her mouth with wine and water while he set the basin outside her door. "Are you sure you don't want to keep this in here for now?" Guilt rode him hard at the memory of holding her while she emptied her belly of its contents. She shook her head. "I'm sure." "What if you're sick again?" It was entirely possible. Cutting the pie and butchering the scarpentine wasn't the worst part. Ildiko's chin rose, and she marched back to her chair. "I won't be." Before Brishan said anything else, she sat down, grabbed her dagger, sliced off a piece of scarpentine and popped it in her mouth. Brishan's eyebrows rose. He hovered by the door, ready to snatch the basin back and race to his wife's side. Ildiko chewed slowly, her brow furrowed in concentration. She swallowed and drank her wine. "Well?" he said. She glanced at him from the corner of her eye before slicing off another piece. The grey mass twitched between her fingers, and she slapped it against the edge of her plate to subdue it. "It doesn't taste like chicken." She bit and chewed again. Brishan laughed, delighted and relieved. "No, it doesn't." Assured he wouldn't have to grab the basin, he joined her at the table. His portion of scarpentine had grown cold. He suspected hers had as well. "What does it taste like to you?" he asked between bites. Ildiko studied the small portion impaled on her dagger's tip. "A little muddy. A little briny. Mostly like someone took a fish, packed it in dirt, and let it cook inside a sweaty boot." He winced at the vivid, albeit accurate, description. "You'd reduce the royal cook to fits of melancholy if he heard you say that." She shrugged. "He's reduced me to retching with this repulsive pie. I suffer no guilt." She lowered her dagger with the scarpentine still on it and pushed her plate away, a shudder racking her slim frame. "I won't lie, Brishan. It's beyond foul. But I'm glad we did this now. I would have humiliated us both at the feast." Brishan shoved his half-eaten portion aside as well and reached for Ildiko's hand. Her fingers notched with his, the skin of her hand so pale he could trace the filigree of blue veins that ran beneath it with his thumb. "I don't think that's possible, wife." Her cheeks flushed an unsightly red. 3 days earlier, her response would have alarmed him into thinking she was ill. He'd since learned such coloration was similar to a Kai's own darkening blush, an expression of anger, embarrassment or pleasure. The tightening of her hand on his assured him hers was one of pleasure at his words.
"You've a stronger stomach than I credited you with, if you could eat the scarpentine without gagging."
It still surprised him. She'd been violently ill after watching him carve up the creature. He'd had no hope of her being able to eat it without growing sick a second time. Ildiko untangled her fingers from his and patted his hand. "I doubt the Gowri court is that much different from the Kai one. If the nobility aren't spying on each other, they're maligning each other. Everything is fodder for gossip and ridicule. Unless you want to be the topic of conversation among bored lords and ladies waiting to sink their claws into you. You eat what's served to you, and act as if it pleases you. I learned early to hold my breath when I..."